You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network, and this is Sophia, your host, and we're entering our second hour. We finally have Lorraine Murray back with us for this show. We were with Alfred Weber the first hour, and now I think Lorraine is on the line. Are you, Lorraine?
Yes. Good morning, Sophia.
Yes, nice to have you here. I was a bit worried that we wouldn't be able to get you today. So anyway,
right.
Alfred and I discussed a lot about electromagnetism in the first hour, and he said that you had prepared quite an outline about this topic in connection with the demolition, and I use that word in an umbrella sense, a generic sense, the demolition of the Twin Towers on September 11th. So how would you like to begin, Lorraine, since we can devote much of this next hour to your work?
Well, I really appreciate you and Alfred discussing the energy issue, the electromagnetic issue. We can call it the energy budget, and that is the very key to understanding what happened at the World Trade Center on 9/11. And there are many aspects of the energy budget that can be looked at, and each of them gives us more information or clues about what really happened. The seismic record for the collapse of the World Trade Center buildings is number one, and the seismic record does not reflect the amount of material and the seismic impact that should have had from those two very robust buildings coming down. And I believe on the seismic record, there was nothing recorded that was probably stronger than a quarry blast. And the impact of those two buildings coming down was certainly much greater than that. The kinetic energy that was involved or should have been expressed when those buildings came down should have been on the seismic record. And the kinetic energy is basically all of the energy that went into building or constructing those two buildings and lifting all those materials as high as 100 or maybe 115 stories. And when a building collapses, all of the energy that went into lifting or moving all those materials up to different heights on each floor would have been released. And we know the buildings came down in 8 or 10 seconds, almost the speed of gravity. So that would have made a huge impact. And it's nowhere on the seismic record. So that's a very important number one clue. Where did all that energy disappear to? What happened to that? And then the other clue that's very important is that the size of the dust particles and the material that was released as the buildings went down required tremendous amounts of energy to produce those very tiny particles, to break all the chemical bonds that in the building materials and the cement and everything involved in the building, the very strong steel girders and beams, and what in the world? Where did that energy come from? It was actually greater.
Okay, we are into our break, and we will be back.
Involved.
Listening to Expansion on Republic Broadcasting, the RBN network, and we are launching our second hour now. with Lorraine Murray and Alfred Weber, who was with us on the first hour. And Lorraine has been explaining the relationship between electromagnetism as a form of destruction, or the form, actually, at the World Trade Center, and the record of seismic activity and other evidence that we have. Now, Lorraine, is there more that you want to cover, or can we go back and discuss some of these things? How are you going to introduce all this material?
Well, I should go through it, and then we can talk about it, because I'll never get through it if we start discussing the fine details.
Okay, that's
so
fine.
Let me get through this, and then we can have a discussion.
Okay, good.
So the amount of energy that would have been needed to break the molecular bonds of all the materials that went into the building was much, much greater than the kinetic energy that was involved in constructing the building. And so you have a big energy budget discrepancy here that has to be explained. And this is where any discussion about what happened at the WTC, or if beam weapons or exotic weapons or HARP were used, it has to start with the energy budget. And already we have a tremendous discrepancy in energy needed to carry out what happened there right from the very beginning, starting with the seismic record. Now, when the buildings are being taken down, it was obviously not a controlled demolition. The buildings just really basically erupted into an emulsion of dust particles, and there was no rubble that hit the ground. If you watch the videos, many videos were taken. It just looks like a drinking fountain of dust from the top of the building down, and much of the dust went directly up into the atmosphere, and there are actually satellite images showing the dust going into the upper atmosphere immediately, and that is defying gravity for any particles that are larger than a tenth of a micron, which indicates that those particles escaping into the atmosphere were actually nanoparticle sized, which is a tenth of a micron, and they are not influenced by gravitational forces. Another clue is that the detritus of the rubble pile from the collapse of a controlled demolition is usually about one-third the height of the building. So there should have been a rubble pile in the case of those two buildings. I think one was 100 feet, and the other one was 115. So there should have been a rubble pile that was over 30 stories high. And also, there were buildings very closely located right next to the World Trade Center buildings, and there was absolutely no damage done to them. Now, a clue as to what happened, or what might have influenced the size of the particles released in the collapse of the building, is that in photos, aerial photos and satellite photos of the footprint of the World Trade Center buildings, is that you could see in the footprint that it was bare dirt. There was no rubble pile there at all. And there were perfectly geometrically round holes 24 feet in diameter in the footprints. And this is evidence of a beam weapon. And I actually saw something like this demonstrated in Livermore in about 1990 when I was a staff scientist at the Livermore lab. And they actually secretly developed HAARP at Livermore with the Soviet Union beginning in 1976. So that was the year of the 200th anniversary of the United States. And even though we were in a Cold War with the Soviet Union, we were secretly developing what basically is the next Manhattan Project with the Soviet Union. And even in 1955, there were microwave ovens and beam weapons under development. The laser project at Livermore is called Shiva, and they developed beam weapons there. Now, when I was watching this demonstration in the middle of the night, they had diverted air traffic 5 miles for a five-mile radius around Livermore. And I had a young physics grad student staying with me that summer. He came and woke me up and said, come outside and watch this demonstration. This is coming from the laser facility. And it was about a 15 or 16 foot diameter amber-colored beam going straight up into the sky, into the heavens. And I said, what in the world is that? And he said, I said, what are they doing? And he said, they're doing an experiment, and they're trying to create a star. Well, I knew that was a cover story because lasers are used to carry out molecular dissociation. It's not to bring materials together, they're for destructive purposes. And also, in some of the news clips where they were interviewing firemen, one of them was talking about the building came down, and the antenna that was on top of Building 1, which came down last, he said it was at the first story on the ground. So where did 100 or 99 stories disappear to? They just completely disappeared, and it absolutely defies the laws of gravity. Another clue that a beam weapon might have been used is that on Liberty Street, which was near the World Trade Center building, there was a mysterious 60-foot hole in the ground with no explanation about what caused it. No one even discussed it. So I think there's quite a lot of evidence, physical evidence, including the seismic record and the kinetic energy involved, to indicate that something very strange happened there. Now, in watching the building coming down, the two buildings coming down, there was sort of a smoke chimney going up into the atmosphere, but there was sort of a dust cover draped down the sides of the buildings. And so some larger particles were falling. Those had to be larger than a tenth of a micron, and but they were still very, very fine dust. And when the buildings had completely collapsed, that dust cloud draping along the sides of the buildings, spread out into the streets just a certain distance, and then it stopped, and then suddenly it started vaporizing up into the atmosphere. So that is another clue that particles that were heavy enough to fall were transformed into smaller particles, nano-sized particles that would no longer be subjected to gravitational forces. And that dust cover of when the buildings are coming down is really very strange, you know, to suddenly start vaporizing up into the atmosphere. That required energy also to break those larger particles into much smaller particles. Now, a human hair is the diameter of about 80 microns. And a tenth of a micron is smaller than bacteria or viruses. That's an awful lot of material just in one dust particle. That's a lot of molecular bonds to break to reduce an 80-micron particle into a tenth of a micron or even smaller. Now, another very strange thing is that when you when you watch videos of the buildings, especially Building 7, huge amounts of paper come flying out of the windows, just pouring out of the windows, and but there are no fires inside. And the paper was lying all over the streets and all over the ground, and even in areas where 1,400 cars were toasted. In other words, the paper.
All right, we are disappearing into our break, and we'll be back in 3 minutes to hear more of this analysis.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Listening to Expansion on Republic Broadcasting, and I'm Sophia, your host, and we're in our second hour with Lorraine Murray explaining about electromagnetism used as the method of demolishing the Twin Towers. Lorraine, we had said last week that we were going to take callers today, and we do actually have a caller. So
okay.
I don't know how far you are into your explanation or whether when you want to take a caller.
I'm about a third of the way, so I'd like to finish this and then take callers, if that's okay.
Okay, well, we only have basically a half hour left, so we may not even be able to do that.
Okay.
All right, but let's go ahead then.
Okay, so what occurred is that there were 1,400 cars in sort of parking lots two blocks from the World Trade Center building. And in video clips and photos of these cars, they had been attacked with something for sure. The door handles were missing. There was paint blistered or the paint was burned off, but not on the whole car, just parts of it, and fresh paint on other parts left. But very mysteriously, the engine blocks were missing from the cars. And you could see a horizontal hole through from the front of the one side of the car to through the engine area to the other side. And if you look through this hole, the engine was completely missing in car after car. It was really bizarre. And the engines had not been removed from the cars. They just disappeared. And that's very odd because there was paper lying all over on the ground. So you have this mystery of how paper, which is a very fragile material and ignites at very low temperature, was completely untouched. And yet iron and metal and paint and windows in these vehicles, the windows were just missing. What in the world physically happened that could create a phenomenon like this? And I don't have an answer. I don't know what happened. But in another clip, a reporter or two reporters were walking down a street, and in the distance, you could see a whole pile of cars parked there, and they just, all of them spontaneously combusted at one time. It wasn't one fire starting in one car and spreading to the others. It was all of them just went up in flames. So some very new and very different technology certainly was used. Another indicator is that rust appeared immediately on the cars, on the trucks, and on the beams in the World Trade Center buildings that were on the ground. And in FEMA photos, you can see very bright red rust on the steel beams of the World Trade Center collapsed buildings. And steel doesn't rust. So what in the world caused this chemical reaction on the beams? No one has ever explained that. Now, also, in the basements of the buildings, if those two buildings had collapsed in a free fall, as we're led to believe by the news media, why were the basements of the buildings undamaged? There were even mannequins or life-size characters dressed up in clothing in the basement of one of the buildings, and they were carried out of the building completely unharmed. Also, a street trolley or some kind of public transit trains were buried in the basement or under the basement of one of the buildings, and they brought those out completely unharmed. So that's also very mysterious. Now, Dr. Cahill, Thomas Cahill from UC Davis, he's a retired professor now, but he helped co-found the Delta Group, which is a consortium of international scientists who study atmospheric pollution all over the world, and they use lasers to analyze the content of the atmosphere in pollution clouds over cities or wherever they want to study it. And he was asked by a member of the Department of Energy to do air monitoring at the World Trade Center beginning on about October 5th of 2001. And he did it without receiving any funding for it. So basically, it was his own private study. And he was asked because he has very, very sophisticated air monitoring equipment. And with very small particles, you cannot capture them in filters. They go right through filters. So you have to use a very different equipment, which he has.
All right, we're into our next break, and we'll be back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
You're listening to Expansion on Republic Broadcasting, the RBN Network. This is Sophia, your host, and we are listening to Lorraine Murray recount the many bits of evidence that suggest or point to electromagnetism as the demolition force at the World Trade Center in 2001 rather than explosives. And Lorraine, you know, I am itching to ask you questions because as you are explaining this, there are so many things I'm hearing that do not connect with my own experience. I did make the video 9/11 Mysteries. I was immersed in this research for years, and I've spoken to people who lived in New York and were at the Twin Towers and were first responders, and I myself have seen video upon video upon video. And not to say that I'm disagreeing, but there is so much to discuss here, and I know that we have callers, so I'm hoping that we'll be able to make our way through this to ask you some very pertinent questions.
Okay, well, let me just finish. Dr. Cahill did a very, very good job with the air monitoring, which he continued into December. So he was doing it for about 3 months. And I told Christopher Bolin, who is one of the best 9/11 investigative journalist about Dr. Cahill's findings, and he actually went to UC Davis and spent several days with Dr. Cahill, and he brought back the report that Dr. Cahill wrote, which was about 2 inches thick, and I went over it with him, and it does provide an explanation of this mystery about why the hardest materials at the World Trade Center location were vaporized and disappeared into the atmosphere, but the most fragile material, paper, was left undamaged on the ground. And what Dr. Cahill said about nanoparticles is, I'm quoting him now, "These size particles travel like a gas. They penetrate windows, doors, everywhere. You don't feel it, and you can't see it." He predicted that the health impact from the World Trade Center attack will continue indefinitely. Regrettably, what we have here is a human experiment on a grand scale. And then he reported the EPA and the USGS were also involved in analyzing the dust samples, but they did a very poor job. And what he reported in his monitoring was 4 categories of material. He said there were fine and very fine transition metals, which interfere with lung chemistry and a lot more than that in your health. 2 acids, in this case sulfuric acid, which attack cilia and lung cells directly. 3, very fine, undissolvable or insoluble particles, in this case glass, which travel through the lungs to the bloodstream and heart. And 4, high-temperature organic matter, many components of which are known to be carcinogens. And then in summary, he said, for each of these 4 classes of pollutant, we recorded the highest levels we have ever seen in over 7,000 measurements we have made of very fine air pollution throughout the world, including Kuwait and China. So that's even more very damning evidence that huge amounts of energy were required to reduce the building material into such fine particles. Now, another very strange phenomenon, and this is from FEMA aerial photos, is that beginning on 9/11, there were 130 dump trucks photographed going in and out of New York City, and also there was extensive scrubbing of the streets, and this is when people should have been rescued. They were out there scrubbing the streets around the World Trade Center. What were they washing away? And in the aerial photos, you couldn't tell if you were standing on the ground, but the dump trucks had dirt or soil in them with tarps over them, and they were loaded up to the edge of the top of the dump truck, but not higher so that people couldn't see that there was soil being brought into New York City. And These dump trucks were coming in and bringing soil and spreading it all over the World Trade Center area, and over a week's time, the piles got higher and higher, and then they would excavate all of it, remove it, put it in the dump trucks and take it out and bring more in. And what was very evident in photos is that there was a lot of fuming on the ground, fumes coming up off the surface of the ground without any explanation. It was not fires. Fuming disappeared during rainy days, and if fires were burning, as they said they burned under the buildings for 99 days, the smoke still would have been coming out of the ground. Now, another very strange thing is that the emergency responders reported, who were working around these fuming areas and the World Trade Center footprints, that their boots disintegrated after 2 hours. Why in the world would their boots disintegrate after 2 hours if there were no fires? And in the photos where they were working, there were no fires. So this is more evidence of molecular dissociation. And then there was also a news interview, video clip, where a journalist, a TV anchor, was interviewing Dr. Tony Daher and Dr. Lincoln Cleaver on 9/11, and they're both emergency room doctors at a hospital where casualties were taken. And what they said on the air was after noon that day, there were no more casualties who came in. And so the anchor said, "Boy, where are all the bodies?" And the two doctors just were flabbergasted. They had nothing to say to explain what happened to all the bodies because there were no bodies. And a fireman also stated there were no bodies. He saw no bodies. So where's the kinetic energy and where are all the bodies from 9/11? Also, William Rodriguez, who was the head janitor, he's a friend of mine, reported that there were no fires in the buildings. And then we're going to go now to
reported there were no fires in the building?
He reported there were no fires in the buildings. That's right.
Okay.
And
on the day of
9/11.
All right.
Yeah, and so then all I'm doing is reporting what I saw on video clips and tapes, what people said, and, of course, there's conflicting information, but I just want to report what I actually saw on video clips or heard people say in interviews who were there at the time. Now, the United States Geological Survey was very involved. I'm a geoscientist. I know them very well. And there was iron present in some of the vehicles and so forth around the World Trade Center. But the beams in buildings, especially robust buildings like these two World Trade Center buildings, were made from steel. Iron rusts, but steel does not rust, and it's also stronger than iron. That's why they use it to build buildings. So,
let me just make a point. Steel is made of iron. It's iron with carbon added to it for
that's
strength.
Right.
Okay,
but it
so
doesn't rust.
You can't say that steel is not related
rust.
To iron. If iron can rust, okay, but I don't want to intrude. I'm just saying certain things. I don't want listeners to think that steel and iron are like apples and oranges, because they're really not.
But they are different physical and chemical materials.
All right, go ahead.
Now, the sample data on the dust and particles that were at the World Trade Center site is not trustworthy. The United States Geological Survey, the USGS, did collect samples at the World Trade Center, but very few. They collected no samples where those toasted cars were located, and they should have collected samples there, too. In the spectral absorption images, which are used to analyze the particle size at the World Trade Center, they indicated that the average particle size was about 1 micron. So that's 1/80th the diameter of a human hair. How do you reduce two robust 100-story buildings into particles that are 1/80th the size of a human hair? That takes huge amounts of energy. So the data from the dust samples and the way the samples were collected indicate that data is not trustworthy and the way it was collected is not trustworthy. Now, the beam weapon evidence is also at the top of the buildings. And when you look at aerial photos of the World Trade Center buildings going down, it's very, very strange that from the top of the building down, the dust cascading down like a fountain is white but all of the dust from the top surface of the building going up into the atmosphere is black. Why do you have that color discrepancy? And in some of the photos that the media showed of the top of the building, those photos had been altered. The color had been altered. Why did they do that?
Excuse me? The color of the photos, the dust in the photos, is altered?
Yes.
I've never heard that before.
In the media photos.
Okay. And what about the video? So you're saying the photos compared to the video show a difference?
The photos or video that was presented by the media, had the color had been altered when it was compared to the original videos or photographs that came from other sources.
Well, I think many of the sources were media sources taking videos. That's primarily what we've seen.
I don't want to talk about that right now.
Okay,
Sophia,
let me
finish this. So the in the collapse of the Seattle Dome, which was a controlled demolition, the dust did not go higher than the building, the height of the building. So why in the photos of the World Trade Center building do you have this dust cloud coming off in a stream that goes up into the upper atmosphere? That's just incredible. Someone has to explain that. Now, what is also very incriminating is that there was some physical process going on Building 1, Building 2, and Building 7. It's sort of a lathering up of the building or on the surface of the building that happened sometime before the building collapses. And it was probably the beam weapon or some kind of a physical process happening that was necessary for the beam to work properly. Now, it started on Building 7 before Building 2 went down. So they were already preparing Building 7 before Building 2 went down. And when Building 7 went down, it was not... I'm sorry, when Building 2 went down, it did not damage Building 7. There were big Freon tanks full of Freon, and something very mysterious about them was involved. There were OSHA statements and sort of cover-up stories. We do know that Freon asphyxiates, or it's heavier than oxygen, so it pushes the oxygen out of a room or a space. So that Freon might have been involved. I need to talk to a scientist, a chemist, about that, about what might have happened. Now, that's all I'm going to say right now about the evidence at the World Trade Center, but the Minneapolis bridge collapse, which occurred just a day or two before our 9/11 Madison, Wisconsin conference, the science and politics of 9/11. It was August 3rd to 5th, 2007, and we arrived and flew in over.
Okay, Lauren, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we discussed the bridge in our last show, and we are running out of time. So I need to open the line up to our caller if he's still on, and if not, then I'm going to have to comment a little bit here because I don't want to take this discussion into the bridge. Since we decided to focus on the World Trade Center, and we have no time. So first question I'm going to ask is our caller on the line still? I'm going to give him a sec. Yes? All right. Thank you so much for waiting. And would you like to present your question to Loren Murray?
It's not so much a question as much as I'm going to add to the color of this conversation. First off, thank you so much for having such a knowledgeable guest on with respect to exotic weaponry on the 9/11 incident, because it's so hard to get evidence pointing in that direction. So I really, really appreciate this interview this morning. However, I'd like to add to the point that For those folks out there that are skeptical still, there is, if you can still see it, if you can still find it on the web, there is a scene where the second tower, whichever the tower was that collapsed, the last one, there's a section.
Building one.
Okay, there's a section there of maybe about five, six, seven floors of the aluminum outside shell that is standing. And then all of a sudden, if you watch really close, it literally starts disintegrating, and it is in powderized form before those pieces actually hit the ground. It is such compelling evidence. I highly suggest you get that captured and analyze that. Now, I'll add to this that on a Dr. Fred Bell program on the BBS radio station, I was in conversation.
You have run into our three-minute break, and we will be back in 3 minutes. Perhaps you can hold, and we'll have only a couple of minutes to wrap it up. You're listening to Expansion on Republic Broadcasting. This is Sophia, your host, and we are concluding. We're going to have a rush to conclude this, I know, our hour with Loren Murray explaining the electromagnetic energy signs at the World Trade Center. And I don't know if our caller is still on, but if you can devote like 30 seconds to make your last point, then we can let Loren conclude.
Absolutely. Thank you. And that's all I'll need, if that. Okay. Now, also, Ms. Lorraine, I'd like you to check out C4. Now, I had heard that those buildings were packed with C4 explosives. Now, I have heard that one of the chemical properties of C4 is that it creates gravity waves. Now, this may be a missing component to your energy question. Where did the energy go? Well, if it's creating gravity waves, gravity is an attractor. It could be attracting, and that's why these buildings fell so fast, is because the gravity waves help bring those buildings down through gravity faster than normal. And I'll just leave you with that. And thank you so much for your show today. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you very, very much. You know, I get so much from the listeners and audience and citizens who give me a lot of information. Sometimes I feel like I get more information from them than they give me. And it's really very important for us as a community, even though we don't know each other, to share this information and brainstorm together. It's really exciting. I just like to read a comment that kind of sums it up. And this came off of a forum on the Internet, so there's no author. We stand at the beginning of a new age. Our government has in its hands a method of disrupting the molecular basis for matter, and its first impulse was to weaponize it. Is this so hard to understand? Like splitting atoms to create destruction was hard to understand in 1945. Of course, this new invention came when the United States ruled supreme. A weapon system, a vast new power, comes in time. We don't have an enemy worthy of it, so naturally we use it on ourselves. Wag the dog. But I want to remind the audience that HAARP was a secret, covert project developed secretly in partnership by the Soviet Union and the United States, and the main facility in the U.S. was Livermore Nuclear Weapons Lab, where I'm a whistleblower. So there is plenty of evidence that this system exists, and it's just up to us to figure out from the clues they leave behind how it's used. And certainly the World Trade Center is a very, very good example of how they are planning to use it. Thank you, Sophia.
Well, thank you, Loren, and Alfred also, who waited, I think, for the second hour without having much contribution, and this has been interesting. I have loads of questions, points that I'd love to bring up. So someday I will do another show discussing all that I have accumulated in my research and how it fits with some of what Loren said and how it may not fit with other parts of that. But again, this is about brainstorming so that we can all arrive at a bigger understanding, an expanded understanding. So I want to thank our listeners. I want to thank Loren and Alfred, and particularly our caller who waited. And next week, I will have on Charlotte Gerson and her son Howard Strauss, whose new movie is opening in Los Angeles, A Beautiful Life.